Today on the True Patriot Love Media Network, in our economy pillar, we're going to break down the revenues and expenses in the 2025 federal budget, just like you would in your own daily personal life or in a small business. With federal revenues hitting an all-time high of $507.5 billion through personal and business taxes, plus other revenues, the federal government keeps projecting them to grow every year. Where is the breaking point for our tax increases? But hold on, federal expenses are keeping pace, growing at an unprecedented $586 billion in 2026. It's your taxes and your dollars being spent, and as a shareholder of Canada, you deserve to know where they're going. Stay tuned, learn, get informed, as you have every right to understand how the deficit hit a record high this year of $78.3 billion and why our debt ceiling is being increased to $2.54 trillion. But hold on, don't forget the second bucket of expenditures that no one's talking about, capital expenditures of $45.4 billion. Why, you ask? The majority of the population and your government representatives probably do not understand the accounting of the budget numbers has changed this year. And quite frankly, they can't follow it. We will break it down for you. So stay tuned and let us know your thoughts. After a long read, we are here today to go through the 2025 budget. And in October, we did a couple shows and we broke down the 2024 budget so we could get the basis of what we're going to talk about today. I'm here with Mike Wixon. I'm excited today to go through it. I have lots of numbers, so I apologize in advance, Mike.
No, it's all good. I mean, I should point out to people that a binder has been produced that will take two binders that will. So I do really appreciate you taking the time, because your background in finance, economy, you know, being an accountant to start with.
I was, yeah.
Makes a difference to how you see this. And just the few minutes that you and I took discussing it in advance shocked me. This is a completely new way to look at a budget for Canadians. And I think we need to understand what that means.
Yeah. And I don't think many Canadians focused on that. You know, in October, Prime Minister Carney came out and he said, listen, I'm going to change this budget to an accrual-based budget. And so people's eyes glaze over right away because it's accounting and I get it. So today I'm going to split it into bucket one and bucket two. So I can kind of, you know, go through. And what I tried to do is, like I did in the last show for 2024, I tried to actually create a profit and loss statement for the federal government.
No, like a corporation.
With a corporation. And what I did is, in order to make it work for me, I actually tied it back to the budget deficit that was announced. So they came out and they did a good job of softening us up before they gave us the budget deficit. They said, listen, it's going to be large. You know, it's going to be generational.
Yeah.
And people were making guesses, you know, on the news, mainstream media was, I think it's going to be this. I think it's going to be that. Well, it came out to $78.5 billion for 2026. So they put out a five-year budget. So the budget's to 2030.
Okay.
What I did is I only did to 2027. So to make it easier.
What made you stop at 27 when they went to 30?
I didn't think it was worth the time. I hate to say that. I think they did a really good job. I'm going to, you know, pros and cons. I think you got to give people credit where it deserves. I think the people that wrote the budget did an excellent job. So, you know, for those of you who, you're not accountants, I'll just say one of the things that was super hard, they were given the task to convert from cash-based accounting to accrual-based accounting. So that's a tough challenge. So they had to go back and they had to restate all the numbers and they had to get it all put together. They had to write it. It was a very complicated budget. Not a lot of people keep up. And I'm sure, you know, not knocking politicians, I'm sure their staffers had a hell of a time. I'm sure the ministers, quite frankly, don't have a clue, most of them, if they're not have a finance background, of what the budget is, because it's very hard to read, you know, and that's not a knock on them. It's just reality is, because we switched the basis with which we account for all the numbers now,
Yeah.
It's difficult to get through. So it took some time. Like it took off and on. It took me about a week to get through it.
Yeah. And not just you, but a team of people. I should shout out the people as well. Christoph, Beacon, MD and Nick, everybody. Yeah. I noticed a whole gang of people crunching these numbers because it is a different way of looking at
it is
a budget. Paul, what is the difference between the two? Can you just take a second and explain what's the difference between a cash basis budget and an accrual budget?
Well, you know, I'll keep it very simple. So I'm not going to get into the complexities of it, but it's simply cash. The way governments used to do budgets is if they spent the money, they recorded it in the year they spent it.
Yeah.
Right. Accrual based, basically, if you make the obligation or if you make a policy for the project, you account for it over 5 years. You might account for the obligation in this year and then accrue it over a number of years before you spend the money. You charge amortization on assets. So really, it is a shift of a lot of your expenditures from your profit and loss statement to your balance sheet.
So is it like saying, okay, over the next 5 years, we're going to invest in all of this that shows up in the budget?
Yes.
And a lot of it we're going to put on the asset books before we even build the projects. On the basis of us making these extrapolations and assumptions, we're going to put them on the books as assets now. Is that how this operates?
Yeah. Once you make the obligation to do them, you record them, right? So then and then as time goes on, you pay for them. There's a liability comes into play. So it does sit mostly, you know, again, on your balance sheet, like you said.
What if the projects don't come to fruition?
You write them off, you know, or you might adjust, you do adjusting entries. So, you know, it's the norm for companies. I think most of us in companies do, you know, it's accrual based. So I think it is the norm. But one of the things I found interesting, we're not talking about the capital expenditures. So, what I did, so to make it, and I want to sort of illustrate this and as we go through the profit and loss statement. So you want to jump in and we'll go through the profit and loss statement.
Show me some stuff.
And then when we get through the profit and loss, I want to talk about how all of it works.
By the way, you can download this yourself and follow along, and we're starting on page two here.
Yeah. So the first thing, you know, we talked about this before, and we're seeing roughly a 1% population growth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so we've dialed down immigration, you know, with birth rates and everything else being so low. We're at roughly a 1% population growth. So on our last show, we talked about the increase from 2019 to 2024 on personal tax rates. And it was pretty aggressive, right? We had already seen coming out of COVID a pretty indexed personal tax rate. So we're now, which I think in those days, we basically were saying tax paid by Canadians was roughly 7,000, right? The average income of a Canadian is about 65,000.
Okay.
Given we have about 30 million people paying taxes, you know, rough here and there, it might be about 31 now, but if you take a look at seniors and you take a look at people who are not on social assistance, you take out minors, you're roughly in a 41 million person country. You're looking about 30 million paying taxes.
Okay.
So we took a look at it, and it's going to go up to 2027 by 13%. So it's not a population growth issue is what we took out of the equation,
so
right? So
personal income tax is going up by 13%, but not necessarily because we have a new base of Canadians paying tax here.
No, it's not. It's not at all. It really is. The indexing on how we pay our income tax is going to increase. So in this budget, we've actively made the decisions come April 30th every year. We get our income tax ready, hopefully send it before. Some of us get refunds, some of us pay. In this case, Canadians will be paying more income tax by about 13. So the average rate of about 7,100 will go up to, you know, $8,500, roughly, you know, give or take a few dollars. So that's going up. So we saw that. The next one, which was interesting, in 2027, we're at $96.7 billion that corporations are going to pay in taxes.
Now, that's a stiff increase too.
It is a stiff increase, and it's a very interesting, I talked about it. This, and just for everyone, Just remember, this is the federal amount.
Right.
Right. So, you also have provincial tax, right?
Exactly.
So this is only the federal dollars that are going into the federal government's coffers. So this is going up to $96.7 billion. It had already gone up, quite frankly, through COVID. It was a huge amount. When I did this, I was actually shocked. It actually had gone up from 2019 from $50 billion to $82 billion. And now it's going up from $82 billion to $96.5 billion, right? Or $7 billion.
There was a major shift in increase in corporate tax around that time, too.
Corporations, yeah. You know, for all the people, you know, who knock corporations for not paying tax. And, you know, there's, you know, roughly 130,000 corporations. We see corporations come and go every year in Canada. So that's a pretty steep increase. Average company, if you look at the stats, and this is give and take a few bucks, is about $250,000 in income tax a year.
Okay.
That's small, big, whatever, average. And quite frankly, this is going to climb 17%. So, you know, tack on, you know, a number we're going to talk about in a minute, unemployment insurance, all the other taxes you pay.
It becomes expensive to run a corporation now.
Sales tax. Yeah, you know, this is where we get knocked in Canada. And, you know, this is an investment budget. So this is, you know, not a great indicator. You know, you don't want to see it go that much. And quite frankly, in our show on the 2024 budget, I thought we had peaked. I really did.
It
I said that number at times.
Did
you watch
it, yeah.
the show? Yeah, I'm like... Yeah. I'm like, you know, because you saw the 2019 to 24 increases in personal and corporate tax, and you said, okay, we're probably hitting our apex.
There's no more room. Yeah.
Yeah, we're no more room. We're at the top of the mountain.
This one struck me as a line item that I never even think of, non-resident taxation.
Yeah, non-resident taxation. So this makes up, it's interesting what makes up this line item. So You basically have energy taxes, which is gasoline, diesel. You have, this is non-resident. I jump back for a minute. Non-resident taxes. Now, they have it going up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Up by 12%.
Yeah. And I'm not sure. That seems a little odd to me, quite frankly, that we're going to have a non-residence tax increase. You know, unless we're thinking we're going to get more people come to Canada and spend money, I don't
that one seemed odd. Because as a non-resident in Canada, usually I don't understand this number, to be honest with you, because yes, you initially come to Canada with your own funds,
mm-hmm.
hopefully,
yes.
and you're spending that money here to get yourself settled.
Right.
That seems like a ridiculously high number to me.
Well, I think it's a lot of these numbers.
I just don't understand it.
Yeah, but. It is. And I think a lot of these numbers are, quite frankly, just indexed going forward. So I think, you know, they always, I call these revenues and the expenses we're going to talk about that tie into the $78.5 billion deficit for this year, which is 2026, kind of standing revenues and expenses.
Okay.
Yeah. So when I call, these are ones.
So this
that,
has moved forward. This is
a lot of times, you know,
on a trajectory that's not stopping.
Yeah. You know, when it's interesting when you, a lot like this is where we are a little bit similar to the US. Our politicians don't spend a lot of time on the givens, the standing expenses right. or the standing revenues. So whether, you know, they're, you know, when there's something they need to talk about, it comes to the table. But for the most part, every year, whether it be personal tax, corporate tax, it just indexes up, you know, expenses for seniors and for healthcare, they just index up.
Yeah.
So we just kind of leave those. They sit on a trajectory, they keep going up. And quite frankly, we don't really seem to adjust them, which when we get to the end of this, you're going to see. We didn't really make, as far as other than a few government expense changes, we didn't really do a lot to our standing expenses and revenue for this year.
Okay.
Next one, GST. This was an interesting one. We had it going up to $56.5 billion for 2027 from 51.4 in 24.
So if this goes up 10%, is that based on an increase in the GST potentially? We're going to hear an announcement that that's going to go up, or that we're expecting that there's going to be that much more in-country business?
They haven't announced, so they're not announcing an increase in GST. But, you know, I think they're thinking, given where we are with the U.S. right now, There's going to be a lot more trade in country.
Okay.
So they're hoping. Now, it's interesting because, you know, and I'm not going to jump too far ahead, but, you know, we're projecting quite a high unemployment rate, almost 9 to 10% coming up in 2027. So I find this one a little interesting that they think people's spend patterns are going to increase in country. Again, I think
unless it is just tariff based in country shopping or in country commerce, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it could be. But, you know, they've also got below, they have their excise tax amount skyrocketing quite a bit. So that, which for the most part, that's your excises, taxes, and tariffs, right? So that's where that comes into play. And
so there's another $7 billion there, another $5.6 billion just this year. But over the span of 4 years, they're predicting a combined almost $20 billion in revenue between custom duties and excise tax.
Yes.
That's a lofty assumption.
It's aggressive.
Assumption.
It's aggressive. You know, the one thing we talked about going into this budget, or the government talked about, is how aggressive they were going to be with respect to their projections and also their investments, which we're going to get to
take
in a few minutes.
Okay. Yeah.
So unemployment insurance, as I talked about earlier, also going up 13% to $33.3 billion. Another hit for corporations, half of that paid by corporations.
So then there's another 6% on top of the 17 that you're already paying.
Yes. And our employees and corporations, they're going to take the hit. So that's, you know, as we're seeing.
Plus, you're going to be paying the energy tax that is brand new.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's a substantial increase for a person right now who's just trying to eke out a living, you know, pay for groceries, car. But they're going to get hit with a tax hit, and then they're going to get some EI hits.
Total revenue off of this after other revenue, which always amuses me, there's only just $37 billion in other revenue. That's going to be up. So other revenue is up 48%.
Yeah, so this is a couple things. So this usually includes a bunch of other programs. It's Crown corporations,
right?
So that are in there, and then like foreign exchange return on their investments. So this is turning out to be where they're allocating the benefits of all their investments. So they're saying by making all these investments in infrastructure and everything else, they think that they're going to see a substantial increase in other revenue flowing into the country.
So not only are they amortizing the expenses over a long period of time, they're assuming profitability on that over a period of time as well.
Yeah, they're budgeting that they're going to see the increases from that, right? So, you know,
I'll be honest with you, Paul, if I did my home economics this way, I'd be in a lot of trouble.
Well, it's aggressive, right? You know, you'd be buying, I was, you know, laughing about it with you earlier. It's kind of like the story where, you know, your business is losing money, but you and your wife decide to actually go out and buy a home and put a pool in it.
Yeah.
Right.
So now I've got to service the losses of my company.
Yep.
I have to come up with a home payment and these renovations.
Yes.
But don't worry, I'm going to amortize all this over 40 years.
Yeah, and the company's going to turn around and I'm going to do great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where it is. Now, if we jump over to page 3 and we go to the expense line, there's some really interesting things to talk about here. So elderly benefits, which I talked about on the last show, we're about 7 million, you know, seniors in Canada right now. It goes up around 3%. A year. So, you know, our aging population increased about 3%. So you can see from 2024, it's jumping up again.
Not 12%, but 17%.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, that's the indexing on seniors payments is very aggressive. It always has been. They're a large voting bloc. The government has always treated them really well. And quite frankly, they're going up to 89, which, billion dollars in 2027 for benefits. It's interesting if you follow this out to the 2030, if you go out to 2030 and you look at what they've budgeted, it actually hits the $100 billion mark. I don't think anyone would have thought that elderly benefits would have ever been $100 billion.
Is this an aging population thing?
No, well, it's a combination, right? It's a combination of very aggressive indexing on the payments. So they get raises every year that are really nice. They're true. Sweet. And quite frankly, it's a 3% growth rate. It really is very easy to track. We talked about earlier, you know, this is the unemployment insurance amount. Now, this is growing. You know, they're basically saying, you know, right now, if you do the math, we have roughly 1.5 and unemployed people in 2024.
0.5 million. Okay.
So what they're saying here is it's, you know, spending $23 billion, we have 1.5 unemployed people.
Now, if you take a look at this chart in 2024, it's at 23,000.
23 billion.
Sorry, 23
yeah.
billion.
Yeah.
My apologies.
Yeah. No worries.
And it's up. It's up $10 billion, $11 billion almost over 4 years. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, the strategy of this budget was to get us back to work.
Yeah, well, that's not, you know, as of 2027, all those things haven't kicked in. So, you know, we're going to be ranging in the 9 to 10% unemployment rate. Really dangerous territory because no one wants to be in that.
That's depression level unemployment.
Yeah, it is. And you know, that was
certainly like recession level.
A 1930s number, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, you know, recession level, if, you know, CPI, if you believe the CPI numbers, they're usually crap anyways, quite frankly. And our inflation rates are usually understated. So
it seems like they are over time. Yeah.
For the most part, probably have been in a recession for the last 2 years, if you look at it with respect to our low growth rates.
But really what this says is we're either going to pay more employment insurance per person or we have a lot more people unemployed.
Yes.
Simply put.
Yeah. Well, we're going to index it slightly, but quite frankly, we're going to have a lot more people unemployed.
But don't worry, after 2027, we'll have all of this capital asset that people will be employed at.
Yeah. Well, then that's the, you know, again, you know, we talked about it's kind of the conundrum they're in. Because after the last decade, they have to spend their way out of it. They have to invest in things. The challenge will be, and we're going to get to that in the show, you know, later in the shows coming up, they have to spend on projects that are going to have a great return on investment. They're going to have an increase in GDP.
Children's benefits was one that got me as well. you know, I think it's great. We do need to have support. We want healthy children, but we have a declining birth rate here in Canada and a sharply increasing 18% being spent on children's benefits. I'm trying to unravel that one.
Well, you know, two things on that one. I mentioned on the last show. So our birth rates are like 1.3 children per women, mm-hmm. per ladies in the country, who are able, right, to have children. And it's declining. So we're declining. We're in the lowest quartile of birth rates in the world right now, which is not a great stat. Our immigration levels have been high, so it's kind of buffered the growth in the country by having immigration rates high. But it's not a great stat. The program doesn't work. So the expenditures, this program and the child benefit programs that we have in place have just not met the objectives that people need.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, it's a combination, Mike, of a bunch of things. So it's not just, you know, I wouldn't say we want to take anything away from people, you know, $10 a day, get daycare. They're all great things, quite frankly. But if you can't buy an affordable home and if you can't buy groceries and you're not thinking about having kids.
No.
So if you've already had a kid and you're struggling, it helps you a little. But quite frankly, the problem is we can't get people to enter the family zone, let's call it, because they can't get their head around how they're doing everything else. So
yeah, there's no financial security for people by and large,
yeah,
to keep that growth potential for family growth. You know, I had three kids. You've had many kids as well. I think 16 or 17. Not that many.
No.
The reality is that's if you take a look at many of the people just working for us in that age group that might be having children soon. Or having one child, that's their thought process. I can afford one kid. And that's it. And so you're right. I don't think that we've actually put this money toward incentivizing people to have families.
Yeah.
Everything else is too difficult.
It's got to be a full package. And we didn't do a good job. But what we're doing is we're sustaining. And because these are, as I mentioned, these are standing expenses, we just take programs and we clip them along, even if they're not working. And then we index them and we increase them, but they don't have the results we need. So,
Paul, can you explain this line to me? The COVID-19 income support for workers line.
Yes.
What is that?
So that was the, remember COVID, we you can see we were paying money to the program and it just dwindled out in 25, right? Yeah. And we started to get some money back. Remember we were getting, we were recouping some funds.
Yeah.
So we actually got recouping of funds. So as we paid back our COVID supports, these were the monies that came back and that's come to an end. So by, you know, end of this year,
we can see that off the list.
Yep, it'll be gone.
So by 2027, $152 billion in expenses, just along those lines right there, all of them with fairly major increases, over a 4-year period.
Well, hold on, go to page 4 because it gets better. So page 4, so it's our transfer payments to other levels of government. We just started to see other provinces, you know, unveiling budgets, and quite frankly, they're hitting deficits. But this is the money we pay to the provinces for healthcare, equalization payments, and other fiscal arrangements, right? So, and this is going up.
The Ontario Fund, I think, is this.
Yeah. Well, we just, you know, and again, an increasing deficit. A lot of scrutiny on that over the last week. But, you know, in 2024, you know, for healthcare and social programs was $66 billion. It's going up to $75.3 billion. So, you know, on previous shows, we've talked about this a lot. We continue to aggressively increase our healthcare expenditures, something that people don't know. You know, they think we're underfunded in the healthcare world.
No, that is not the case. No.
Yeah, we're not. We're finding out pretty quickly that comparatively, per capita, we are actually third in the world in healthcare expenses.
And just miserably ineffective at spending it.
Yeah, our GDP, our healthcare expenditures to GDP, third in the world. And I think we're number 5 in the world on total healthcare expenditures. So we just haven't figured out all the issues in that system right now. And that's a challenge,
but we're throwing another 14% at it over.
We are, we're ramping up now. Will there be any net benefit to it? I don't think so. I'll be truthful with you. I think this is just money that's going to get sucked into the system. So I think the system, the way it's working now, quite frankly, it'll be put into the system and then it'll basically just be eaten up. I think this is money.
It really doesn't seem like it. I mean, whether our healthcare is underfunded or overfunded, 14% to change a healthcare system that is so obviously broken, I think would shock Canadians in itself. I think Canadians would say, no, we need a 20 or 25% increase to do something that'll make a difference.
Well, their service levels are down. Their wait times are up. You know, they're seeing all the negativity and they're saying we've got to spend, let's throw money at it. Throwing money at it, it's not based on the stats, that's not the issue.
No.
That's not the issue at all. So
there's something
broken.
Broken in the system.
Yeah, it's broken. So transfer payments, you know, I think other than Alberta, I think everyone gets transfer payments now. Correct me if I'm wrong. And by the way, if anything you see in this presentation, you know, please, if you have another idea or if you think you'd like to correct us on anything, just send us a note. We're really interested in your opinion.
I don't think anybody here is trying to be an authority. We're literally going through it. But poor Paul, because he is our economist, he gets, I think you found it very interesting because this time we have a different kind of budget.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's important for people to understand. So take it a second to go through it. I think it's worthwhile.
Yeah. Pollution pricing.
What is that?
So that's our carbon tax. That's gone.
Okay.
You know, remember we charged it, then we rebated it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it just phases out over time. So as you can see.
Wow, we still have to hand back $30 billion, huh?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
$30 billion has to. That's a pretty big commitment. When you hear them say, okay, we're going to cut the carbon tax,
yep.
You know they're not getting rid of $30 billion. Take a look elsewhere in the budget. Wow, this is very interesting. So transfer payments
yep.
in 2024 were $96 billion. by 2027, a 22% increase of 117.
Yeah.
To 117 billion.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. And quite frankly, you know, when you look at it, you got two things here. You got the transfer payments, which are going up. And this is kind of the slush. I call this on the last show, this is the slush fund, right? So this is kind of where everything gets thrown into. If you look at companies, you know, there's always an account where you don't know where to classify it, so you throw it in this line item. But this is a very big line item, right? So going up 22% at 117. So this is anything from payments to other countries, payments to First Nations, any programs, and a lot of defense is in here. So you can see we had a pretty healthy increase in our defense line item, which we're going to go through on the next show. So these are all in this line item. And then, you know, which is talked about quite a bit, you know, they said we're going to decrease spending on government. And on the last, the 2024 breakdown, you know, I made a comment that, you know, it's interesting when the biggest department or the biggest spending in government is government. And it is, you know, it's an entity of itself. And they want to sort of stop that. We saw through the last decade about an 8% growth in the government spending, the operating expenses. They've said time out, and they're starting to ratchet that down. They have a plan to eliminate 40,000 jobs through mostly attrition. You know, if there's a job posting, they won't fill it. People will retire. So that's a phasing program that they have going, and they're dialing it down to 3%. So it's not going down.
But it's not going up to 8% again.
Yeah.
In this arrangement.
It's going up, you know, it's another $4 billion versus 24, you know, and it's $144 billion. So there's lots of room there. They talk a lot in the budget about programs and expense review and all that good stuff. But in, you know, 2027, it's 3% increase. And then, you know, the one that gets the most press, it's basically the public debt charges.
Yeah.
You know, the interest on our debt climbing from $47 billion in 2024 to $60 billion in 2027.
That's 20%, 27%.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it is, but, you know, our debt ceiling. So I think the government last week went to it's the Auditor General, I think. Is it Christoph? Can help me with that? But they went to him and asked him for a debt ceiling increase to $2.54 trillion. So, you know, we were looking at that. You know, the question came up the other day, what is the U.S.? And I think they're $38 trillion.
Yeah. So if you compare.
Yeah, we're in the same ballpark.
Not far off.
And we're not far off. 10 times the population. So, yeah.
Which makes sense. I mean, we are an extension in many ways of the U.S. I mean, sovereignty aside and everything, we are going to be affected in similar ways, right? To match economies.
Yeah. Except for if you think about it, it's a little crazy. We actually don't have a military like they do. So quite frankly, they spend $1 trillion a year almost on military at this current time, and we don't, right? So, you know, we have a fairly comparative growth on our debt ceiling, but
we don't have a massive
spend, which is defense. So.
Let's not tell them that. They'll be asking for us to chip in, which I've actually even heard Trump say
a couple of times. And then at the end we have actuarial loss, which is quite frankly, tends to be our pension decline. So it's the money that our pensions are losing, as the markets change. You know, it'd be nice if that flipped a little, but quite frankly, it hasn't in the past. So we've never projected, from what I can remember in the last decade, an increase. And again, I might be wrong, but I've only seen this as an expense item as we go through, which means, you know, the erosion of our government pensions, which tend to be spent, which is interesting. We looked at this last show. The balance of our investments by our government pension funds are in the U.S.
Oh.
Yeah. So it was like two-thirds of our spending on or investments of those pension funds don't even occur in our own country.
So once again, tied to the U.S. economy.
Yes.
We rise and fall with
up
the tide.
And down, yeah. Which, you know, we're going to hopefully change that. Hopefully there's a way to get around that. So now we talked about, and this is where I wanted, you know, we've been through that. So, you know, we looked at the revenue, we looked at the expenses, we looked at it from 2025 to 2027, right? And we basically did a full analysis on 2024. So we understood what had happened from 2019 to 2024.
Which, by the way, I don't think anybody has done out there. It was so funny. I was looking out there for who has done that analysis. It's really important because you realize where we're at and that it's only part of the picture.
Yeah.
With this budget.
Well, it is. And quite frankly, you had to figure out where we were before COVID, where we were after COVID. And then now you're okay. Now I know. So we started looking, and this is what got interesting because, you know, when we first heard about the budget, all people focused on really was the 2026. And everyone remembers, I don't want to harp on it, but, you know, there's been a lot of, you had the election, you had the governments, you know, not sitting for the federal government.
We were prorogued forever.
Prorogued forever, yeah. You know, and it seemed to take a long time. We were waiting for, you know, the NDP leader to retire, and a bunch of stuff was going on. And it was keeping government, you know.
One more tick against our pension budget, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, You know, and it was keeping government not seated for quite a bit of time.
Right.
So we didn't really see what was happening in 2025 because we didn't get a financial update for quite a long time.
Yeah.
So, you know, this year, middle of the year, we got an update and we started to see what 2025 was. And then we see 2026, but we're already in, you know, November, we're at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So quite frankly, March year end is a government year end. So 2026 ends in March 31st. So pretty much our deficit on those standing expenses we just talked about is going to be $78.3 billion.
Wait a minute. March after they do this. So that's not part of this budget. That's not part of the expansion of this budget. That's just money on the books that we're going to spend ongoing. It's the base.
It's the base.
Operating.
It's to pay the seniors, pay the pensions, pay healthcare. So just if you think about it as your home, you know, it's the $78.3 billion is pretty much just what it is to, you know, keep your home running, pay the utilities.
This is not part of the expansion and development budget. Our bills.
Well, that's so bucket one. I call it, let's do it this way. Bucket one is just your regular expenses and revenue.
Right.
So that's just the money you make every day less the money you spend.
Okay.
Right. Bucket two is what your capital is. So that's if you want to buy a new home, a car, put a pool in. That's that type of stuff, you know, in the layman's term for a person.
New
right?
money to spend.
Yeah. For government, that's basically the capital projects. That's the new money they want to put into the economy. So that's really what he's talking about, the prime minister, when he's talking about investing in the country, right?
He's not saying that he's putting $70 billion toward new. He's saying combined our house expenses and our desire to renovate and put a pool in, that's the budget we're looking at here, all of it combined.
Well, he's not really saying he is and he isn't, right? So he's kind of telling that, and this is the media spin on it. There's been, you know, in the budget, there's a lot of graphs talking about the full spend over 5 years and everything else, but you really have to break it down by year to figure out where it's going and how. So in 2026, so the year that's going to end and the new, you know, the accounting on it, we're going to basically spend $123.7 billion on the money we lost as a deficit. So the money that we were over. So there are revenues were not enough to cover our expenses. So, you know, we were running a business, but we didn't make enough money to cover the expenses. So we basically were over 78.3.
That's our 80 billion right there.
That's our, And then that's where we decided then to spend money on projects. So then the new pool, right? And that was the $45.4 billion. So all
now
told,
we're at 123.
we're at our expenditure for the year with the two combined is 123.7. The financing requirement. So this is buried, I think, on page 280 something in the budget. They came out and said, well, because the money we spent, we lost the money, the revenues being not enough to cover our daily expenses and the money we spent on projects, we need financing of about 137.9 billion. So, you know, to keep the lights on and keep going, we need to borrow. So we need to go out and, you know, borrow money, you know, bonds, print money, whatever. We need to do that. So we need to get 137 to cover. Now, the interesting thing, if we would have done it the, you know, and this is very complicated, but I won't spend a lot of time on it. If we would have stayed under the old accounting methodology, that would have shot up by another 30 million. We would have been about 30 million higher because under a cash basis, our cash capital expenditures would have been significantly higher.
Right. Okay.
Right. So, right. So, okay. But for the time being,
but because this has been amortized over exactly. Such a long period of time, we see it as a lower number.
Yes. We see it as a lower, but we still, you know, in the budget, they're still saying we need to go out and we need to borrow $137 billion. And then for 2027, it goes up to $149 billion. So we're going to have a slightly lower.
So we're going to go and borrow another, what is that? Another $11 billion the following year?
Yeah.
Well, just to match the budget.
So here's the thing. Our operating deficit goes down. So we're gonna start to get our operating deficit down to 65.4 in 2027. That's that first year I was talking.
Right.
After, you know, we've changed the accounting systems. And then basically we're gonna spend 56.7. So for $122 combined billion dollars. And by the time we go out and refinance it, we're gonna need about $149 billion to keep the lights on.
We basically double the budget from 2025 to 2026, and then it tempers a little bit in 2027, but we're still, you know, almost double what we spent in 2025.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we really are. And that's where, you know, but, you know, I said on previous shows and Mike, I just, you know, wrapping this up, I just wanted to go through with you. I don't know if you have any other choice. So I'm of the opinion, and I've said it on previous shows, the challenge is whatever capital expenditures you pick right now, here's the challenge for the country. And I think this is critical for everyone to pay attention to. They have to be good, productive, revenue generating projects. So you can put so much into infrastructure, you can put so much into defense, but you also need to be actually doing projects that you can
showing a return
that will produce things that will be sold.
Right.
Right. Sold for a profitable amount, not sold at a loss. So, and that's how you get your GDP productivity and your PPD productivity to increase. And those are things you got to pay attention to right now. And I think a lot of economists and bankers right now are kind of echoing that concern, is that you really got to put in those guardrails and those reporting mechanisms and accountability to do that. And what's kind of, I don't want to be critical of anyone on this because this is a difficult time. But I think, you know, the opposition is spending a lot of time, you know, we had two non-confidence votes and, you know, they basically, they threw up kind of silly, I thought they were, you know, usually when a budget goes up, you usually have, there's three readings, the final reading's the important one. Both the other parties get a chance to amend. Their amendments weren't very good. I was disappointed. You know, I think the last one was, you know, we don't agree with the budget because it hurts Quebec. I think the Bloc threw that one up. And I think, quite frankly, I think there were better ways to actually put in amendments, to actually put in guardrails and accountability and reporting so we could...
Maybe Carney expected the opposition to come to the floor with guardrails rather than actual opposing of the budget. Because, like you've said, mm-hmm. and many people have said, this is not a horrible budget. This is kind of what we have to do. I mean, it's not the greatest news in the world always when you get to the economy of a country, and we're in that scenario. But is it not better to, this is just my opinion or a question on that basis, is it not better for us to be working together on the amendments to this thing that makes sense and just get it passed so that we can begin? Or should we be voting this thing down?
Oh, that's a tough question, right? If you can't agree on the amendments, quite frankly, you're going to get there. And I think, unfortunately, we took those two votes and we didn't take the opportunity to have constructive dialogue.
Right.
I think we missed an opportunity. And I think if both parties would have sat down, or all parties would have sat down and come up with some really reasonable requests in order to put those in place, I think it would have been a better use of time. I think
maybe the Prime Minister should invite them to the table.
Yeah, that would have been nice, right? Yeah. Rather than worrying about who's walking across the floor, let's worry about how to make this work.
They might have actually, things might have stayed the course, actually, with people crossing the floor or taking a powder or abstaining votes, because they had an opinion and it made a difference.
Yeah, I agree, Mike. So hope you enjoyed this, and we're going to continue. So we're going to do a couple part two and three, talking about the actual pillars that were in this budget, specifically with respect to operating and capital expenses. So please subscribe, watch, and we hope to see you soon.